Welcome to Menopause Rescue. I'm Dr. Polly Watson. Midlife women are often caught up in a sea of symptoms. Too often, they're overwhelmed by the lack of support from mainstream healthcare. They're inundated with so-called experts who are selling solutions which may lack credibility. I'm a Menopause Society certified gynecologist with both traditional and functional medicine training. I'm here to guide you through this transition and help you decipher the facts from the fads. Armed with credible information, I hope you are empowered to rescue and restore your health, making the second half of your life your best.
Hi, I'm Dr. Polly Watson. Today we're going to talk about weight gain and menopause. And this is such a common concern for women coming into my office. Now, sometimes this is really straightforward when someone is really relying on ultra-processed food. They're not eating at home. They're not controlling what they're eating at all. They're kind of living on convenience food. Where it gets a lot trickier is when women are, you know, already engaged in a lot of health-promoting behaviors. They're already exercising. They're eating a cleaned up diet. They're not drinking empty calories. And they come in and say, look, nothing has changed. I'm still doing what I did 5 years ago, but I'm putting on 2 or 3 pounds every year. And everything that I know how to do to get my weight under control isn't working. And it feels so unsettling because they don't know what else to try. They're already doing all of the things. And then sometimes that's compounded with a lot of frustration when they see that they're investing a lot of time and energy into creating health, and they're surrounded by maybe friends that are not engaged in such health promoting behaviors, and their friends don't seem like they're struggling at all. And oftentimes these women aren't technically overweight. They're just not at a comfortable weight for themselves. And, you know, they just want their clothes to fit again. And when they bring up this weight concern in the conventional space, maybe to their regular primary care physician or provider, sometimes they're not met with being taken seriously. And they're kind of told, well, you know, you're not really overweight. And so sometimes women come in my office and they're so frustrated because they feel like, is someone going to make me get to the point where I become obese before I'm going to be taken seriously? And so they just feel like they haven't been heard and they don't feel like they have a lot of solutions. So we're going to talk today about what is going on in midlife when you're exercising the same, you're eating the same, and yet you're putting on 2-3 pounds a year and nothing else has changed. What's happening there? And that's what we're going to talk about in part one. And then in part two, I'd like to really take apart some common recommendations that women are given on social media and the larger media on losing weight and try to really get into the nuance about where these recommendations are coming from, but also when they could be useful and what are situations in which they might actually be harmful, so that we can hopefully get a roadmap so that you can personalize what direction might be helpful for you as an unique individual. So first, we're going to hopefully not take a flying leap into the quicksand of diet culture. When we talk about weight, I think it's important to pause and be deliberate about our language and our message. So I want to be very clear and say, I don't want my message to women to be that we need to keep restricting and continually take up less space. That is not what I want to convey here. I want to support you in feeling strong and healthy in your body. And this can happen even if you can't get into your skinny jeans. We're living in a culture that promotes thinness as health, which is actually not often accurate. Our goal should be metabolic health. So what does that mean? Metabolic health means that your body has normal blood pressure, normal triglycerides, normal lipids, normal blood sugar, and your waist circumference is less than 34.6 inches in women. So when I'm thinking about health promoting behaviors at midlife and menopausal transition, I'm thinking about resolving insulin resistance, maintenance and promotion of lean muscle mass, quality sleep, diverse exercise with an emphasis on lifting heavy weights and doing the mobility work so we don't get injured, an anti-inflammatory diet, and fulfilling social connections. Your strongest and most resilient body may not be your thinnest one. So what's going on at midlife that's making us gain weight, especially when we haven't done anything different? So as our hormones are changing, even in the perimenopausal time period where estrogen levels can sometimes be too high, sometimes it can be too low, we know that patterns of hormonal change in perimenopause are very different. Not all of us go through it the same way. Not all of us go through it over the same amount of time. We typically see women put on a pound, 2 pounds every year during this time. And some women will put on, 10, 20 pounds fairly rapidly. So what's going on? As estrogen levels are changing, particularly as estrogen levels are going down, we become more insulin resistant. Insulin resistance means that glucose can't get into the cell to be used as energy. If glucose can't get into the cell to be used, then it's stored as fat. And it's typically stored as fat in our liver. And a lot of times we have a huge upsurge in the incidence of fatty liver or non-alcoholic fatty liver. And then we have a lot of deposition of abdominal fat. So I hear a lot in my practice that, my hourglass shape kind of turned into SpongeBob SquarePants. We sort of lose our waist. All of the weight is going to the middle. And unfortunately, kind of more visceral fat or more what we call central adiposity, that more middle belly fat, is not as good of a place to store fat for our health, our heart health, and our metabolic health. So all those years that we resented feeling curvy and having bigger thighs and a bigger backside, that's actually a much healthier fat distribution for our heart than having belly fat. So the first thing that's going on is as estrogen levels are changing, there's more insulin resistance. When we can't get glucose in the cell to use as energy, it's stored as fat. It's stored on you typically as belly fat, which is a less healthy fat for us to have. Sleep disruption is another huge reason why midlife women are gaining weight. And we see sleep disruption affect weight at a lot of moments in the reproductive life cycle. So maybe you're familiar with data in the postpartum community, right? After we've had babies, oftentimes it's really hard to lose that pregnancy weight. And in that community, we see that when women are getting 6 hours of sleep or less, it's much more difficult to get off the baby weight. Well, same thing with menopause. Women who are having hot flashes, night sweats, sleep disruption, who are getting less than 6 hours of sleep a night, have a much more difficult time losing weight than women who are getting adequate restorative sleep. And there's kind of a vicious cycle here, right? So not only is sleep disruption promoting weight gain, but weight gain can promote sleep disruption, right? So when people are really struggling with their weight, they may have airway issues, which may cause sleep apnea, which then may cause more sleep disruption, which may also then cause more weight gain. So it's kind of a vicious circle. So sleep is super, super important. And I would say, if you're considering a weight loss journey, regulating sleep would probably be the top thing to work on first, because I think it's really hard to exercise and meal plan and do all the other things you need to do when you're exhausted. I think aside from hormonal change, it's also important to think about what's going on socially during this time. So when I'm talking to women about sleep, sometimes it's not what their hormones are doing. Sometimes it's that their partner snores and they're not getting quality sleep because their partner is keeping them awake at night. So if you need to make time for intimacy outside of bedtime and sleep in a separate room from your partner, I encourage you to do whatever works for you to get the sleep that you need. I think another kind of social thing that's going on for a lot of midlife women is that we might be launching children into the world as young adults or older teens. And so some women may have impeccable sleep hygiene and maybe we've got their hormones completely balanced, but they're waiting for that teenager to come in at night and they can't really go to sleep until they know that their loved one is home safe. And so that's another disruptor. Some women are caregiving for older parents and maybe that person needs help in the middle of the night. So I think when we think about sleep disruption, they're absolutely correcting hot flashes and night sweats. Absolutely, sleep hygiene is super important. Sleeping in a dark room, but also maybe strategizing to get some help. If you are caregiving, can you split those duties with somebody else? Can you hire some help? Can you and your partner, if you have a partner and you're waiting for a child to come in to make sure they're safe, can you guys strategize so that your sleep is not always the one that's getting disrupted? Related to sleep disruption is certainly stress hormones, right? So when that, let's say in that example of someone who has sleep apnea, their cortisol or their stress hormones are really high. Cortisol promotes insulin resistance, and we're back in this circle of glucose can't get in the cell. It's going to be stored as fat. That's more often belly fat. So stress is a huge factor that is compounded during this time of midlife transition. So we may have more stress just because of, again, we're trying to launch children into the world. We're trying to care for older parents. Maybe we're at points in our career where we have a lot of demands on us. Maybe we haven't really recovered from some social isolation from the pandemic. Maybe just the fact that we're midlife and we're struggling with symptoms that we're bringing a lot more work home because our working memory is impaired and getting through our workday is that much harder. So a lot of times, again, when we're, you know, we're all, when women have kind of grown up in diet culture, the first thing we think about is I need to eat less to lose weight. And that may not be the problem. It may be the first thing you need to do is sleep and work on some active stress management. So you could be eating a kale salad with chicken on it with an olive oil-based dressing and doing all the things right. But if you're super stressed out and you just had a fight with your partner, that meal may still be really inflammatory to you if you're in on a high-stress state. So stress management is super important to weight loss and overall health in general. As we're transitioning into menopause, estrogen changes also have an effect on muscle mass. So as we age, we are losing muscle mass each year. And as our lean muscle mass goes down, our metabolic rate goes down because muscle burns more energy than fat. So this is one thing that makes me so crazy, is that a lot of times I see women restricting, and they're not eating enough protein. And so they're really promoting loss of lean muscle, which if they do lose weight on that very restrictive plan, they're going to end that plan less metabolically healthy than they started. And they're more likely to gain all the weight back and then some because they have less muscle mass than when they started. So estrogen can help us build muscle when, as estrogen levels are going down. Even if we supplement with hormone replacement therapy, it's a super important time to focus on protein and focus on lifting heavy weights. Now, what do you mean when you say that? Because, you know, if someone's been sedentary their whole life and you put a 50-pound barbell on their hand, that may not go well. So wherever you're starting from, you might be starting with body weight, and that might be great. You might just be starting with learning how to do a squat, a lunge, and a plank. That might be fantastic, right? As you progress, when we're thinking about lifting heavy weights, we want the last 2 to 3 reps of the exercise to be challenging. And so you shouldn't just be able to do 50 reps of the same thing. You know, we're not thinking about making little arm circles with 3-pound weights in Pilates class. We're thinking about, you know, picking up 10, 15, 20, 25 pounds as we progress and doing fewer repetitions. Maybe you're doing 8 to 12 reps, but finishing the exercise is getting challenging and doing 3 to 4 sets of that. So, and then as that gets easier, then you increase your weight. So we really want to promote building lean muscle, which means lifting heavy weights or even doing body weight exercises and eating adequate amounts of protein. Certainly changes in the gut microbiome are influenced by how our hormones change. And when estrogen levels are going down, we can see changes in what we call intestinal permeability. I think a lot of people would be more familiar with the term leaky gut. In that context, there's more systemic inflammation. When the body feels inflamed, it's harder for it to lose weight. We also see, and we're still learning about this, so I think this is kind of an evolving topic, but as estrogen levels are going down, gut motility also goes down. So I often think about the gut microbiome as sort of organisms in a stream, right? You don't want to have a little mosquito pond where you have stagnant water and things are sitting there for a long time. You really want the gut to keep on moving. And so if estrogen levels are going down and gut motility is going down, there's an opportunity as things sort of fester in the gut microbiome for dysbiotic or bad bacteria to overgrow. And that, again, is inflammatory and can affect weight. And then lastly, a lot of times women are given medications that can affect weight. So kind of probably at top of mind for most people is going to be antidepressants, right? As a lot of us are going through this transition, we may be having some more irritability. Maybe we're having more PMS symptoms. Maybe we're having some hot flashes and night sweats, and we're working with a healthcare provider that is maybe not comfortable with hormone replacement therapy. And so they're sort of going back to, okay, well, let's just give the person an antidepressant. And an antidepressant can help with hot flashes and night sweats. The problem is that most midlife women I'm working with and been working with for the last 20 years is that most of us are struggling with our weight and most of us are not knocking out of the ballpark with libido. And so if I'm going to give someone a drug that is going to affect arousal, orgasmic function, and libido, and also make them gain weight, I need to make sure I have an in-depth conversation with them that the benefits really outweigh the risk for that medication. So many medications will promote weight gain that are given at midlife. And so especially in the context of menopausal symptoms. So I think of all of these things, insulin resistance is so important. I mean, they're all important. I think sleep is so, so important. And so it's not just calories in and calories out. Hopefully understanding some of the hormonal effects that are whole body and are affecting weight will really help give you the tools then to feel like you have a little bit more control over what's going on with your health. So in part 2, we're going to talk about some really common recommendations that are made to midlife women and kind of think about why they might be helpful or when they may not be helpful for specific situations. So hopefully you have a clearer map of how to interpret if these are good things for you to do for your own health. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for listening to Menopause Rescue. If today's podcast resonated with you and you want to take a deeper dive, check out my educational resources. We offer basic membership, which is an archive of over 100 videos on menopausal topics ranging from bone health to libido. We add to this archive every month, so the resource becomes richer and richer over time.
Hey, this is Dr. Watson. This is just a friendly reminder that this podcast is for general information purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine. No doctor-patient relationship is formed, and any information you get from this podcast is considered educational only. You should make medical decisions with your healthcare provider. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice. Listeners should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition, and they should seek assistance from their healthcare professionals.